Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Another new week and another new podcast. It's Monday, the 7th of September, 2020. Greg Haynes and Julian Ryder are with you as we look back at the Tellwell round of the World Superbike Championship. We're into the second half of the season, three races into it now. And for the first time since Australia at the top of the year, we have had three different winners from three different races. First of all, welcome to the Full Throttle podcast from Eurosport. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the Eurosport website, and all other podcast suppliers as well. But Julian, first of all, we always say it, don't we, in the commentary, what's the story? Well, there's quite a few this weekend.
Take your pick. Johnny Ray continues to do what Johnny Ray does, which is beat the odds, win any type of race. But I suppose it's Rinaldi. Opening his account, I'm changing my tune a bit from what I was thinking earlier in proceedings. But that final race when Rinaldi gave Ray a hard time and Johnny had to work, and you're looking at this young Italian and you're thinking, hello, Ducati must be getting quite excited.
Yeah, because, you know, that's Jonathan Ray there, who's now 96 times a World Superbike race winner. That century is coming soon. It can't come in Barcelona. Could come at Magny-Cours. But, Michael Rubin Rinaldi, and I can't think of a single frame from the coverage across the whole weekend when he ran wide. I just can't think. He was sublime, wasn't he, today?
He was the best Ducati. Every time we went out, Scott Redding had a nightmare race too. Chaz had a nightmare race three, a pretty upsetting qualifying. And Rinaldi, frankly, outperformed them both, which is not something I thought I'd be saying today.
And we know his bike is very close to being a factory bike anyway, even though it's in Go 11 colours. But even so, that's a private independent team. And they've come through and won a race. They've had two more podiums. Remarkable.
We also know he's a very good mate of the Aruba team manager.
Yeah, we do. Well, actually, chatting with them over the weekend, they've been saying, haven't they, he is to Ducati and World Superbikes, I think it's fair to say, what Freddie Spencer was to HRC, what Marc Márquez is now to HRC. He's their little baby, isn't he, basically?
There is still, obviously, if you're an Italian motorcycle manufacturer, if there's an Italian that's going to do the job for you, it's double bubble. That makes me worry for Chaz's job. And it also, you start thinking, well, Scotty, you know, I wonder if Honda made you a big offer for next year. You know, what you should do.
It is fascinating stuff because Rinaldi's already been linked to the Aruba team, hasn't he? For obvious reasons. He was in the Aruba junior team when he won the stock title 3 years ago, but they were already talking about him riding there next year, even before this weekend.
Absolutely. And given as we keep talking about the whole ethos in World Championship motorcycle racing, as with everything, it's triggered by Marc Márquez. Moto Grand Prix team managers are now absolutely of the mindset that the old guard cannot beat Marc Márquez. Why the hell should I pay, you know, somebody any money at all to race my motorcycle if he hasn't beaten Marc Márquez in the past 5 years? I'll have a fish around in Moto 2 or even Moto 3 if you're Honda with Jack Miller and see if I can pull out of that pool a Brad Binder, a Miguel Oliveira, a Rio Quartararo.
I mean, let's be honest as well. There are so many of them, aren't there? I know Pata Yamaha, for example, and Paul Denning was talking to Eurosport on Sunday. Okay, there's so many people they could go to, but the chances are they're not going to go to Chas Davis or Eugene Laverty, for example. They're going to go to Bobier or to Locatelli or maybe Loris Baz. It's a fact of life, isn't it, at the moment? The other guys are not old by any stretch of the imagination, but...
Chas Davis is the same age just about as Johnny Ray, 33?
Yeah.
I'm an admirer of Chas Davis. Have been for years at all the classes in Grand Prix. He did, et cetera, et cetera. But he hasn't beaten Johnny Ray yet. What makes you, if you're a team manager, think he will? Remind yourself, the job of a team manager is not to give some really good bloke, a nice bloke, a good racer. You don't owe him anything, let alone a job. What you do as team manager is try and find the next world champion.
Yeah, because that's another thing. I mean, that's another thing that's changed, isn't it, I think, in recent years. You look at Formula One, for example. Good example there. Frank Williams has just parted company officially now with the team that carries, for now, his own name. Hopefully, it still will in the future. But yeah, unlike in the olden days and in bike racing, the name on the team is not really the boss anymore, is it? So these bosses are now being paid by big corporations, whether they're manufacturers or drinks companies or clothing companies, whoever's sponsoring the team, they've got a job, haven't they? They've got a big pressure on their shoulders from the execs at the top of the company.
In the current climate, money is hard to come by.
Yes.
If you're taking a budget off somebody, you'd better be able to deliver.
Yeah, otherwise that team boss might be out on his ear as well.
Otherwise, why? Why? I mean, there were certain... I suppose you think back to when Ducati came to Moto Grand Prix and went to Bridgestone, Livio Supo's little. He knew they wouldn't win the championship. He knew at some places they'd get hammered. And he also knew that at two or three tracks, they stood a damn good chance of winning. And that's what happened. It was, if I can't deliver a title, what can I deliver? And he went to a sponsor and basically, went back to the big sponsor and says, well, I can deliver you front rows. I can deliver you pole positions. I can deliver you some wins. I'm not promising anything above that, but we can do that. And look what happened.
So could we say then it's fair to go back to the last few years with people like Serafino Fotti and the other people in that Aruba Ducati team and say, good job, because they've been lining Rinaldi up for a few years now, haven't they? And sure enough, look what's happening now.
Obviously, as you said, he's come up through the production bike route, which isn't traditional for anybody on the continent anymore, but they saw something. And obviously, Italian championship ride, European superstock and stuff. When all said and done, as you pointed out a minute ago, those are factory rides.
which pay well, of course, because it's not all about that, but it's very much about that.
You've still got to put, pasta on the table, haven't you?
Well, you have. In fact, Jules, for anyone who's maybe listening to the first time, hello, if you are, thanks for joining us. You've been around in this for a while now as a journalist, as a commentator. Why is it, some people might ask, that some riders are Grand Prix riders in MotoGP and others are in World Superbike? Is it true that everyone wants to go to MotoGP? What's the situation?
Well, the situation is that the interesting thing, I had this discussion years ago. I forget who it was. And we're having a general chat about riders not using the number one plate. Now, they won a title and not using the plate. And I asked, I think it might have been Quartararo many years ago. And he said, well, I wouldn't use the number one plate if I won Moto. Why not? He said, there is only one number one plate, and that's Moto Grand Prix. Some people get caught up with the idea there used to be specialists in 125, 250, and 350. There weren't really. Everybody wanted a 500 because it's the only way you could make any money. The only way you made money on a 125 or a 250 was if you rode for a factory team.
Okay, yeah.
Other than that, you were scrabbling around to get the diesel if you were a good 250 runner, while trying to put together a good 500 so you could get the event actually paid some money.
So this explains as well then, of course, why so many of those top riders would go and do all of those non-championship races, which paid so well in prize money on the Adriatic coast of Italy, and the race at Cadwell, the race of aces at Snetterton. You got all these foreign names coming over to Britain as well, didn't you?
Because there was money to be had. I mean, I nearly, look, thankfully, I didn't have time in Super Sport 300 to come on about the Dutch trio of Hartog, Van Dorman and Middelburg, who used to come over regularly to internationals in the UK, coachloads of Dutch fans following them. And, you know, they didn't just take the money and ride round. Those boys came over and put it about a bit.
Yeah.
Took the money and went home.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's if you're of a certain generation of bike fan, you think, where are the Dutch guys? You know, you grew up and you saw Dutch guys, Will Hartog. He was third in the famous Sheen Roberts at Silverstone. Third man, other man under Austin, was Will Hartog. Last privateer to win a 500 meter Grand Prix, Middelburg. You know, there is. You know, where are the Dutch guys?
Yeah.
Maybe the kids we've been watching in the 300s. Maybe that's a new generation.
Because it's easy to forget, isn't it, that many of these motorcycle races, as glamorous as all of this looks on the TV, they're quite normal people, really, aren't they, deep down? They still have to go home. They've still got bills to pay. You know, they're not absolute, the top ones are you know, doing well. But someone like Michael Rubin Rinaldi is by no means a multi-millionaire with a private jet. You know, that is not the reality, is it?
But at least he has been working for a factory for a few years.
Yes.
And he will not have to worry about paying the rent.
Whereas other riders in the field, and even in the superbike field, are actually paying to be there, aren't they?
Yes. It doesn't happen quite so much. It's not so much you're paying to be there. It's almost, you could say, that some teams, certainly for a second rider, outsourced the job of getting sponsorship. Of course you can have a ride.
Yeah.
You know, bring your sponsors along and we'll... I mean, what's it cost to run a... You know, how do you write a business plan to run, let's say, a midfield super sport or Moto2 team? You can't justify that, can you?
Especially with all the COVID restrictions now making it even worse.
How do you justify that? How do you make a business plan? I mean, there years ago, a team manager in 500 Grand Prix told me that a privateer team, that he'd never, ever got any sponsorship from agents or people who said they would go and get it there. It was the fan with the checkbook who contacted them through their website.
Wow. Wow.
You know,
I'm not surprised.
There was
so much of this is passion fueled, isn't it? It really is.
There was a Ducati sponsor. Memory chip people. Sandisk? Can't remember.
Yes. Yeah.
The marketing, you know, I don't think I'm giving away any secrets, but somebody very high up in the marketing department was a Ducati freak. And he wrote the business plan. You know, he was a well-qualified man and, you know, put it into, I think the company was West Coast of USA. And suddenly an email pings onto his desk. Get on the plane and come and see us. He thought he was going to be fired. And the so the bigwigs are there. They go, this passes the cost per pair of eyes test. And next season, our hero was stood in the back of the Ducati pit wearing the uniform, grinning his head off.
It's interesting. I mean, it always amazes me when you get some real top brains in the world of business, entrepreneurs, people like Tony Fernandez. Remember when he got involved with QPR, Queen's Park Rangers Football Club.
My mother's daughter, I know who they are.
Okay. Oh, right. Yeah, of course you do. Okay. Tony Fernandez is an extremely switched on, smart person. Air Asia, of course. He's the man behind Air Asia, the airline. Richard Branson behind the Virgin Empire gets involved in Formula One. Flavio Briatore was involved in QPR, if you remember, with Bernie Ecclestone. But all of these people, as smart as they are and as much money as they have made in the world of business, I've ended up losing a lot of money when it comes to sports ventures sometimes. I don't know whether the passion overrules the brain at times.
Yeah, it's football clubs are the best example. It's perfectly sane, responsible businessmen, successful people lose their marbles when they get involved with a football club.
Yeah, seems to happen a lot. I suppose it's also fair to be said, and we'll probably never know, unfortunately. Well, touch wood, hang on, here we go. Touch wood we will know one day. If we're a multi-millionaire, Julian, perhaps you can afford to take a bit of a risk like that. Even so, it's interesting.
It's interesting, isn't it, as to you know, what happens to people. You know, sanity tends to go. I don't know what it is. Or because I'm really good at building widgets or selling millions of widgets, now I can run a football club. Well, they're different skills.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go back to racing and let's look at the psychological aspect of the whole weekend, because I think for Scott Redding, I mean, he really has been through an absolute assortment of emotions this weekend. He's had frustration, he's had pure anger, he's had tears, literally. We could hear him sobbing in the back of the Ducati garage on Saturday after the crash. Then he comes back to a win in the sprint race earlier on. And then the unusual thing for me is, in a way, that both Aruba Ducati riders changed the tyre for the second feature race in comparison with the first. And you have to think again that Jonathan Rowe's just more comfortable because he knows what he's dealing with. The others are switching tyres and they're not so confident, are they?
I mean, as you said, commentary that Jonathan Rea made some utterance about, oh, maybe I will take a risk and change tyre and have a... No, they don't do that. That's exactly what they don't do. Because they have a package that works and they know, couple of clicks or whatever, they know that team knows exactly what that motorbike's going to do. And the idea that they would go, tell you what, let's have a look what the soft tyre does this afternoon. Gibberish, Frank. The Ducati boys, I was confused about as well. I've no idea what Chaz. It must have been temperature related in some way from what we heard after the race. Must have been the thought that the difference in temperature was, what, 7 or 8 degrees? Well, I tend to think from what I remember, and this is stuff I've got in my head from Grand Prix, so it might not apply to Pirelli's, that you needed 5 degrees of difference, I think, with the Bridgestones, and maybe even a little less with the Michelins. But the Michelin tyres, you know, you hear N20-odd tyres they make or something, front and back, but they're so close together in spec. Oh, he's gone on the medium. Well, it's, you know, it's the proverbial what's it from the soft. And I think that's the reason why Chaz's team would have decided to do what they do, I think.
It's interesting because Chaz raced with that X compound on Saturday. Scott Redding, to be fair, still got to the podium with it today. So there's different ways of looking at this. You could say, have they missed the boat? Should they have tried this a bit earlier and maybe worked on it more in the tests and they just didn't think it was possible, or were they convinced it didn't work? Could you, you know, that's one way of looking at it, maybe.
Feels like that they didn't know.
Mm.
Whereas you and I know that Perry Reber and the Kawasaki team damn well did know.
And the other thing is, and people are saying this on Twitter, there's different opinions, obviously, there's no right or wrong necessarily, but people are talking about it. Jonathan Rea wasn't on that tyre anyway, and he still won the race this afternoon. So it's not all about the tyre, is it, surely?
Of course not. And this is, I think we've all been guilty of it this weekend, of fetishizing one thing, and that, you know, it is never one thing. It is that vast and complicated jigsaw, or equation is better. If you alter one factor, the answer alters, but there's 8 other things in there that stay the same. The tyre thing was interesting, especially with Scott Redding. I think it got to Scott Redding a bit that I'm a Ducati rider who can't use the and rider, you know, riders are like, they can be prone to this. You know, he's got it, I haven't. Oh my God, I must have it. Whereas that doesn't afflict Johnny Rea and Perry Reber. They just look at what their motorbike's doing, what the lap times are doing, you know, what their data from testing, and they're just not distracted.
No, it's almost as though, Jules, I don't know whether you agree, the tyres, yes, they had a big part in the weekend, they always do, but almost, it's almost as though more than the mechanical effects they had on the actual motorcycle, it was the psychological effects of the tyre situation.
Well, we all know that all top-level international sport is mainly played north of the eyebrows.
Yes.
And Johnny, you know, he's made me fall about laughing a couple of times with some very disingenuous comments. You know, so unsubtle, it was hysterical. You know, the start of the season, well, I'm more worried about Toprak than Scott. You know, yeah, of course you are.
Yeah, who, by the way, is now nearly 100 points behind Jonathan Wright.
Yamaha have had two nightmare weekends at Aragon, which I was disappointed by, frankly. I expected more. I really did. Reasons, I don't know. I really don't know. The R1 is a really good all-round racing motorcycle. It seems to go well everywhere. Very Yamaha. You know, it's the fastest thing to a speed trap. It's not, you know, ABC, but they work and work well. But you'd be hard put to say that about them this weekend.
Which leads me to this. Looking at the philosophy of these companies, Yamaha, Honda, Ducati, and so on, it almost seems as though, despite bikes changing, tyre technology changing, circuits changing, riders obviously changing, and all sorts of other things, the general philosophy of these companies has never, ever changed. Is that a good or a bad thing?
It's because if you're a young engineer out of university, you join the engineering department at Yamaha, the men above you who have been doing this for decades educate you and steer you in the way things should be done.
Okay.
It's in Japan.
Yes. But you we've all been in jobs, haven't we, in any line of work, and we've all had different jobs over our careers, I'm sure. You know, from when you come out of school, whether you go to university or you don't go to university. I don't know whether you did you go to uni? I didn't go. Did you go, George? You did. Yeah. Sorry?
Chemistry.
Did you? Okay, you were talking about physics over the weekend a lot, but it was chemistry. Okay.
Scientific education.
That makes a lot of sense now. That makes a lot of sense. But yeah, the reason I was saying it is, yeah, we all come across situations, don't we, in the world of work where sometimes you get a situation where, okay, somebody might change something for the sake of changing it, but it doesn't need to be changed. However, sometimes something does need a change and somebody will say, oh yeah, but we've always done it like this, which is almost the reason you should change. And sometimes they don't. Is that a little bit like that in these manufacturers?
No, I think that's over... It's not oversimplifying. That would be rude of me to say that. What it is, I think, you know, there is a philosophy of the way Honda does things.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, many of which can be traced back to what Mr. Honda said. The first time I went to the Honda Museum, there were two vehicles at the entrance. One was a Bugatti. And one was it a Moto Marini racer? An Italian lightweight four-stroke of the 50s. And there was a Mr. Honda quote, as there is on the little poll, saying, how can you hope to be the best if you do not understand what the best is? And these were the two best racing vehicles starting out. So that, you know, that's... then you pass the one saying the product cannot lie. And then you...
That's true.
But Honda's view was that, and this might have been the marketing guy rather than Soshiro Honda, that punters will not buy a bike that is slow. Therefore, my bikes will be the fastest through the speed trap. Or else people will be slow. And they won't buy unreliable motorcycles. Therefore, my motorcycles will not break down on the racetrack or people will be sacked. And once we've got that sorted, we can think about winning races.
So even now, even though, you know, you hear sports bike sales are down and all the rest of it in some parts of the world, certainly in Europe, generally speaking, it's still that win on Sunday, sell on Monday motto.
It's still there. I mean, HRC has always been sniffy about World Superbike, never wanted to be involved. They thought, the Japanese factories thought right back in 1988, this is for the Go 11 type team. The, you know, it's a private sponsor, private team. Yes, you might get a bit of help from various people, but it's not a full factory team. You know, replacing the old TT Formula One, which was thought of as the same way, to be a non-Grand Prix production-related championship.
which again relates back to the way the Flamini brothers dealt with it as a business model, wasn't it? It wasn't necessarily supposed to be the pinnacle of racing, but it was entertainment, wasn't it?
It was a different, yes, it's no sense, if you've got Moto Grand Prix, you don't have invent another Moto Grand Prix.
Exactly, yeah.
You want a different product.
Mm.
And at the start, of course, the wild cards, which I still think was one of the great, and the two races on one day.
Yes.
Was, you know, that was different. It felt different when you went there from a Grand Prix. It was different from a Grand Prix.
Whereas now, actually, we haven't really spoken about this on air because it's sort of old news now, isn't it? Three races per weekend. But what's your take on the general weekend format now? Two races for the Supersport classes is better, but what about the Superbikes?
I think it's fine. I think I understand that three full-length races might be a bit much. So sticking in a sprint race, which I was a bit sniffy about when they started doing it, I think it's actually not a bad formula now. And the, you know, I was confused by calling it the Super Pole race. What, we did qualifying yesterday? You know what
yeah.
are you talking about?
Yeah.
And
calling race three race two because it's the second full length race just seems silly, doesn't it?
I've got some arguments about the nomenclature used.
Yeah.
But by and large, I think the race program, I think, is pretty good. I mean, it was ludicrous not to have two super sport races.
Yeah, agree. There was one thing I meant to mention before, actually. Sorry to go back to tyres again. Jonathan Rea, in the interview with Eurosport on Sunday afternoon, said, as you know, the qualifying tyre has a yellow band around the sidewall. And he said the X-compound tyre, the Super Soft, has a red marking on. And he said, I looked across from second position to my right, which is obviously Scott Redding on the pole. And he said, I couldn't see the red mark. And I was a bit confused because I thought Redding probably would go for the X-compound. And then he studied it again when he got back in to Parc Fermé and noticed that the Ducati guys had gone over the red markings in black. So isn't it great, these mind games? You know, Jonathan saying it's a bit disrespectful to consider only Scott as the main rival. That was back in Portimao. And now Ducati colouring in the tyres. I mean, it's great, isn't it?
It's good stuff, just throwing the ancient art of stamping the wrong number of teeth on your sprocket in case anybody's having a look what your gearing was. Mm, you know, that goes back to that. And I mean, I remember Jerry Burgess when he was Rossi's engineer, and the old, I think it was a white stripe on some tyre came in, or a yellow stripe, and he was straight to the magic marker shop. You know.
Funny.
I stopped doing it fairly quickly because Grand Prix's a bit, you know.
Yeah.
They tend to be a bit more no tweaking, no gamesmanship. They try to, Ducati, obviously.
Was it, I must ask now what I'm thinking about it, was it Jerry's idea then to sweep the track in Qatar, or what was the story about?
So.
Was it?
I think so.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure it was. I don't think it was Valentino's.
When you were there, obviously we're going a bit off topic here on a tangent. This is 2004 we're talking about, isn't it? And Qatar was towards the end of the season there.
First Qatar Grand Prix?
Yes, it was actually, yeah. Wasn't it? In September, was it that year, I think. What was the first you remember of that story? Did people see it at the time, or did you all hear about it the next morning? Or
I think if you were late at the track on Saturday, rumours started.
Right.
But nothing was clear until the morning.
So Dorna and co checked the CCTV, I suppose, and
I
saw what had happened.
Yeah. And people would talk to.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, it's an interpretation of the rule book.
Yes.
That, you know, you're not allowed to clean, you know, you're not allowed to alter the track, or, you know, altering, or was that cleaning, or was it the other way around?
Yeah.
As usual, there's a bit of legalese has to be gone through.
Yeah.
Whether somebody's just been clever and got their way round a rule, or were actually infringed.
I can't believe Jules Cluzel's misfortune. I just can't believe it. He's broken his leg after he was hit by De Rosa.
The only thing that has taken the gloss off a great weekend of racing is Jules injuring his lower leg, his left leg. Again. That again, that really chills me. You know, if I'm right, he can't change gear with that foot. He's got the gear change on the other side now because he can't
use
his ankle anyway.
Yeah. Correct. An Ian Hutchinson inspired system there.
An Ian Hutchinson style seriousness of injury.
Yes. Yeah.
And I just think, oh no.
I know. What has he got to do? I mean, obviously, from a championship point of view, Locatelli almost had it won anyway, and he really has got one hand on the trophy now. But that sort, obviously, it's sort of almost irrelevant, isn't it, with poor old Jorg Clouzel in that condition. But let's just hope. You know, I very much doubt he's going to be back this year. If he is, brilliant. But I just hope it's not going to be any lasting effects there because, you know.
That's it. I mean, normal people would say, do you know what, I should have given up after the first one. Why am I still doing this? You know, silliness. And you just hope he has the option when it's repaired that he can decide what he's going to do.
Yeah, but he'll be thinking about it. Obviously, he's a father now as well, so I don't know whether that'll have any bearing, but we'll have to just see.
Who knows what the other half will have to say to him.
So one thing, Jules, just before we go, Barcelona's coming up in a couple of weekends' time. By the way, next week's podcast, we'll be talking about Silverstone British Superbikes with one of the guys from there. Barcelona, they had a test there in July, and we said at the end of the broadcast today, Jonathan Rea, I reckon, he's looking best actually for race pace, but that's going to be quite possibly another brilliant Redding Rea head-to-head. I hope it is.
Well, it has that feel, doesn't it? It's not, I suppose it's not that different from Aragon. Quite a long straight.
Yeah, yeah.
Fast, long corner onto the straight.
True. One thing I would say is the finish line is further down the straight. That could have a bearing.
Could indeed. It's quite a way down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then, you know, chicane, drift corner, fiddly bit, back straight. And then, you know, it's one of those circuits that's got a bit of everything and tests, you feel, all the assets of a motorcycle. It tests your engine, it tests your chassis, it tests your setup, it tests your tyres. When was it last resurfaced?
Oof, that's a good question.
It can, when temperature gets high, it loses all grip.
Well, the chicane was built in 2007. Obviously, I know the motorcycles aren't using that again now. When was it last resurfaced? We'll have to check that. It's got to be 5 years or so, maybe?
Maybe so, yes, because there was a phase where it was getting bumpy and
I
think Formula One cars ruck the carpet up at the edge of the room. But it's it's of the modern circuits, it's one of the best. Built in 92. But it, of the new circuits, the new era circuit, is absolutely one of the best. Tends to let different motorcycles exploit different parts of the track. You know, it doesn't feel like, oh, it's a Ducati track, not a Yamaha track. It's a place you go and think, well, I wouldn't be surprised if Johnny wins here. I wouldn't be surprised if a Ducati wins here. And I wouldn't really be surprised if Aldo Bautista could step it up. Oh, and by the way, haven't we mentioned the Yamahas? They'll go all right here.
It's great. I mean, actually, that's one other thing we can just confirm. We have now had already the same number of race winners and podium finishers as we had in the whole of the 2019 season. Just before we go, Jules, when I came out of the commentary box this afternoon, a couple of our Eurosport colleagues were there from behind the scenes, and one of them said, oh, that's it. Championship's done. Johnny's going to do it now. The other one said, oh, I'd still put my money on Scott. What's your feeling now?
Well, that's a race. What did the gap end up at?
It was 27 going into the sprint race, and then it increased by 9, so it's 36 now.
36. A race is worth and more.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'd be a brave boy to bet on Scott anybody, even Scott Redding, who, as you know, is the man who's given Johnny more trouble than he's had for a good few years in this championship.
36, did we just say it was? We did, didn't we?
See, did we say 36? I think we did.
Yeah, because no, I'm just thinking about it out loud because if this is really interesting, actually, if I've not got this wrong, there's 5 points between first and second, apart from the sprint race, which is 3.
Yeah.
So that's 13. 3 times 13 is
39.
So, yeah, we'll get there in the end, Greg. A bit slow after a whole weekend. So even if No, so Ray can't afford to finish second to Reading in all of them. That's not going to happen anyway, is it? No, I was just trying to work that out. So, yo, the pressure's on Ducati, isn't it? There's no other way of looking at it.
We thought Ducati would take big lumps out of Johnny Ray this weekend. They didn't.
No, they didn't. But they should have done, could you say? I mean, you know, they should have done, shouldn't they? Surely.
I hate the ifs and buts in racing, but yes, right, they probably should have done. If they sort of qualified better.
Yeah.
I think that would have made a heck of a difference, because certainly the first long race, it looked to me like Chaz had the pace. I'm not saying to beat Johnny, but to give him a race.
Yeah. But again, it just comes back. And I know I'm going to get some stick here from people who say, oh, we favour Jonathan Ray too much. We really don't. We don't favour anyone, do we? But you have to praise, you know, credit where credit's due is the phrase. Jonathan Ray is not a 96-time winner and 5-time world champion for no reason. He makes the best starts, having qualified the best. He does what he needs to do early doors. He's the best attacker. You know, when he needs to overtake, he overtakes. He does what he needs to do. He gets the job done, doesn't he?
And he had to fight for it this week.
Very much so.
And he had to concede to Scott Redding in the for the first time in what, six events, did we say? Yeah. In the sprint race.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who thought that would happen?
And he could have settled for second behind Rinaldi, thinking, oh, well, he's miles behind in the championship. I'm ahead of Reading. But he didn't even do that either.
He went, nothing old racers hate more than a fast youngster. Have to put him in his place very quickly. They were interesting in Parc Fermé is always fun, the last race of the weekend. Johnny and Rinaldi chatting away. Scott Redding mooching around, examining the rear tyres very closely on all three motorbikes.
Yeah.
Really joining in.
And Scott Redding on the podium, standing there with his arms folded, he did not want to be there.
He was not happy. I mean, Scott is a bright boy. He knows that he was expected and probably was expecting to come out of here probably leading the championship again.
Well, yeah, when you consider there was just 10 points between them coming into the round. Yeah, indeed.
You know, maybe, but, you know, like that. So that's really useful for a radio broadcast. You know, more or less level, 1 or 2 points, 3 or 4 points either way.
Yeah.
Not with a race and a bit worth of deficit.
Yeah. Just to give you an idea there, Jules was basically waving each of his hands up and down to say, a bit seesaw, weren't you, Jules?
Yeah, that was useful.
Well, Jules, thank you very much for everything over the weekend, Jules. Barcelona in 2 weeks' time. May the best man win.
And we still don't quite know who that is.
We don't, do we? And that is what is so great about World Superbikes this year. And perhaps it comes back to what we've been saying all season long. It might also depend on how many people are finishing between Ray and Redding. Sure enough, as Rinaldi did this afternoon.
As Rinaldi has done, Alex Lowe, what a fit Alex Lowe's would have done would have been interesting.
Yeah, by the way, what a weekend. I mean,
heroic.
We thought he might not even race, but he ends up doing, what, top five this afternoon.
Aldro Bautista, Chaz Davis. I mean, that Honda is coming on. I know Aldro had a bit of an Aldro weekend. But he's going to mess a few people's plans up before the end of the year.
I suppose if we put a positive spin on it from Honda's point of view, at least he's feeling like he has the confidence to push that hard now.
And he looked like he meant it.
Yeah, he certainly did. Well, on that bombshell then, watch out for HRC, everybody, because we could have more winners this year. It's going to be absolutely phenomenal. And isn't it great to see that we've had another winner other than those top two at a circuit other than Phillip Island, because that's important too, because that was obviously a strange weekend, as it always is. Jules, thanks very much for everything. I will speak with you very soon, and we will see what happens, won't we? We'll be back with the podcast next Monday to review Silverstone BSB. Jules, thanks again, and I'll speak with you soon.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.